Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today to talk about the stadium practice that was held tonight on Saturday night, June. Sorry, make that July 30th. That would be something if it's in June. But and here to talk with me about it is Alec Poulianos of Ravens, formerly Ravens Recap, now One Winning Pie.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken. Yeah, I still get mixed up in my head, so it's all good.
I got a lot of things mixed up these days, but nice hot night at the stadium. Definitely not ideal for comfort. Pretty small crowd, I would say about 15,000 maybe was there. Only the lower deck was in play. They didn't have any club or upper deck seats, so it was a modest crowd. A lot of people really taking advantage of a great night out for the kids. And this is one of the things you really love the Ravens for, the way you put on an event like this. It's free. They have fireworks. They give away. They have autographs for kids after the thing, and it's a very nice combination of activities, preventing a free night out for your family. And when you think about how expensive football is as a sport to go watch in person, and you know, you and I both know that full well. Some people want to go on the road and do it, and you add even more expense to it. It's really nice to put it in reach of other people, and they do this during camp. They have free passes they give away to the fans, and they give away these free passes to the stadium practice as well.
Yeah, it's super cool. I saw that there were definitely a couple more seats too in that lower bowl, and I was like, I wonder if they sold out those seats, but because they were free, people didn't go and they didn't use their seats or whatnot. But it definitely was a really good showing, a lot of enthusiasm from the stands, as far as I could tell from the live feed. And like you said, like you did see a lot of children there, which is great, because it's really hard to bring those kind of kids to the game, because it's hard to justify, or maybe they don't want to sit for the whole 3 hours and stuff like that. So it's really nice that they can get a little taste, and as they can grow up more and get more I guess stamina, so to speak, for the games, they can come and watch them more.
Yeah, 100%. This is the practice is significantly shorter than a game, but I would say a good portion of the kids did not make it through to the fireworks or even the autograph session. But they started lining up kids for the autograph session before practice was even over. So it's really run well from that perspective, and it's a good night out. It's a family event. Good to have that when it's possible. But let's get right down to practice in terms of what was going on tonight, because I wouldn't say that we saw a ton schematically about the Ravens tonight, but I would say that we started to see more about who's obviously in line for starting jobs, who's maybe in line to get more playing time as the season goes on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I thought that some of the offensive formations were telling. For instance, Tyler Wallace, I never saw him with the first team, maybe once. Or twice, but it seemed like he was really mostly with the second team, which somewhat makes sense, but it was an interesting thing to see. And also just seeing, how these tight ends are poking through in the formations. I saw Boyle was with the second team. I don't think too much of that for what it's worth. But and more interesting was the offensive line, in my opinion. Who was on the offensive line for the first team?
Yeah, absolutely. So Cleveland's still NFI at this point. He wasn't at practice today. He's probably the most notable absence. Obviously, we know about other ones, and Charlie Kolar and all the PUP guys who whatnot, who were supposed to, we knew were not going to be there. But, with Ben Cleveland out, this is at this point hurting him for sure in terms of being the starter. He wasn't a sure thing when this began, but to be NFI and still not have passed a conditioning test by what is now the fourth day of camp, in terms of the fourth day of practice, is really not good.
No, not at all. I think this is a huge demerit in his ability to get the starting job. I think he'll have to truly be great the rest of the preseason, because this is not a thing that Harbaugh will accept. I think I'm trying to remember other people who have failed the conditioning test and how long it takes them to get back. Mm-hmm. This feels particularly long. And yes. It does not scream like, oh, maybe their condition was a little off, or they took the wrong pacing through it. It just screams that there's something really wrong. And I'm really discouraged by it, because I was hoping for a really healthy battle for this left guard position. I was hoping that maybe we'd be in the position to trade away Powers. And I'm wondering now if that's going to be even an option.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's certainly a big question right now. The Ravens are not so pressed for cap that they need that money. But I think that they probably thought either him or Juwan James would be gone by the time the regular season begins, and they'd have some influx of dollars. Now it looks like, well, Juwan James is playing first unit left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the rest of the first unit, by the way, on the offensive line is Phillips at left guard. And then the guys you would expect, Linderbaum at center, Zeitler at right guard, and Moses at right tackle. So I think, you know, the offensive line is already not where they want it to be. With those five playing, with the left side being what it is. But I think the good news I can take from that is Juwan James seems to be doing okay so far. We'll have to see him under live fire at that left tackle position. And it sure would be nice if he could be the backup directly there and they never have to move Morgan Moses off that right side if anything were to happen to Ronnie.
Yeah, I think that's what they're shooting for, and I think that's fair. It doesn't seem like Falele is going to be ready yet, based off what I saw at practice. And it doesn't seem like they're having any tackle reps for McCary right now. So I think that good is point. Their plan.
Yeah, really good point. We saw McCary. I did not see him anywhere else than center in this practice as we recorded it. Mm-hmm. Now, that may not be true. He might have played a few snaps at guard, and I just missed it. But he didn't play any at tackle. And they've got a lot of guys they were looking at. The second team, in fact, was 62 is Sharp, right?
Yep.
Who's back with the team now. Yeah, and he's not listed interestingly enough, on their roster here that they gave out. But Powers was at left guard, which you would expect. McCary at center. Right guard, and this is one that's a little bit interesting because he's actually getting reps at guard, is Khalil McKenzie.
Oh.
Took time there. And he's the one that I think might make the team specifically because of his guard designation but actual defensive tackle value.
Mm-hmm. Right. I didn't notice that. I'm glad you called it.
And then the right tackle, of course, Fa'alele is the second string guy. Some good things happened with the offensive line during the day. Maybe we talk about the offensive line first because there's a lot of cross pollination of these various drills we can talk about. But where would you like to start there? We'll let you pick it. And
I would like to know what drills you saw of Fa'alele and how you thought he looked. In the parts that I could see, he seemed just slow getting out of his stance. And I thought that was going to be problematic, you know, in general. Just he didn't seem like he was quick enough yet at this level. And I thought that he might be a liability if he had to be a starter at this point.
Hey, the most telling drill for the offensive line of the entire day isn't any of the 11-on-11 stuff. There's a little bit of trying. There's also a little bit of brother-in-law play involved, but they really want controlled contact at this point during camp. Mm-hmm. Which means they don't want you to go all out against a man across you from you, except in one drill they did at the end, which is a kind of a one-on-one pass rush versus pass blocker drill. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they set up all five offensive linemen and they set up the defenders against them, and then they just have one rep for a specified one-on-one matchup within that. So the other guys just kind of stand up and the two go at each other. So Fa'alele had two reps I saw there. The first one was against, let me see, this is not correct. Yeah, I guess it was. It was Jeremiah Moon, number 51. And he pushed him past the pocket, kind of a 12-6 block, as I've seen. And I thought he did a very good job on that one. Now, I wasn't specifically looking for how he got out of his stance. One thing I did notice is that immediately after basically what was a winning rep, that Morgan Moses pulled him aside and was coaching him after the play about his footwork. Mm-hmm. So that speaks to some of the issues, the technical issues that may still be there. Definitely a thing, you know, in his draft profile that you're not as worried about. You know, he really looked more like in Minnesota, a guy who could mirror that pass rusher pretty well.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the things. And maybe once, you know, it's real games, like we're, what, a week away now? Mm-hmm. A week and a half, I guess, from the first game on Thursday, is just to see, you know, even if he looks maybe a little slow out of his stance, how is he able to use his length? How is he able to mirror and maintain the block? Because it might not matter too much, just given his ginormous size.
Yeah, I mean, he is a massive human being. He's not fat. He is just massive.
Yeah.
You know, he lists at 380 pounds still on the roster. I couldn't tell you if he was all of that, just that's too heavy a human being for me to really kind of have a normal scale of what I'm looking for the extra 20 pounds or whatever.
Right.
But he is very physical. And I thought this was a problem at Minnesota, was kind of some patty cake play. Mm-hmm. He was not using his punch in the way, but I saw a little bit of that in tonight's practice. So that was good. His second rep, and he only had two in these one-on-one pass rush drills, he got the defender to slip, and I did not get the number. Things move pretty quick on a rep-by-rep basis through camp, and I don't know. I'd always get the numbers of both players, but he got the defender to slip, and yet he could not finish him after he slipped. Instead, he kind of slipped going after him, so it might have been kind of a wet spot on the turf there. Mm. And then the other defender got up and was back in the pocket right away. So that was a little frustrating, but I think there may have been condition issues there that were going on. Not conditioning, fortunately, but condition issues of the field. So that was a little odd. Anyway, I was basically happy with what I saw from Fa'alele. Obviously, he's getting coached by Moses. That's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, he's seeing something that's not right. But on the other hand, I'm glad to see that there's that kind of relationship. That can only help the Ravens.
Yeah, and I think we all know that it'd be pretty optimistic for him to grow so much in this first year that he might be able to take on a starting job overtake these veterans per se, maybe in an injury situation. But it's great that he's learning, and that was kind of the point. You know, he had such a high ceiling that if you draft him and you don't necessarily need him right away, particularly with all the other insurance plans we have, that he could turn out to be one of the better tackles after some time.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked enough about that, I think, on the individual shows and whatnot, for me not to kind of repeat myself ad infinitum about that. But yeah, I'm hopeful that, you know, he gets a shot, but I'm also very pleased that it looks like they have a plan to move forward with James if Stanley, for some reason, is not ready to go. And hopefully, it's not something they have to go to the market for more and different resources, but the four guys they have in-house between Fa'alele and Moses and James and Stanley can get that tackle job secured without having to go to any of the interior guys and move them out there, whether that be Phillips or McCary or whoever. So hopefully they'll be able to figure it out with those guys.
I'm so curious what they're doing with Stanley and when they're going to activate him, because some of the stuff that you see suggests that he's probably able to go in some capacity, particularly for some of these drills. But they seem to have him in bubble wrap, and I'm just really curious to see when they're going to take him out.
Yep. We did see a little bit of additional play. Let's see. Cologne got in for a few plays. Of course, everybody does.
He had a bad snap. That's one thing I noticed.
Yeah. The snaps, overall, I thought the snaps were pretty good. McCary had one that was... Whenever I see a snap, I try and grade it. Mm-hmm. Don't always catch everyone. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this. In 7-on-7, snaps are crap because you're not facing anyone across the line of scrimmage from you, which is your main problem. You have to make a line call for those guys. Mm-hmm. You have to change your assignment to do that. You have to be aware if Zeitler is the guy making those calls and what you're doing, and then you have to time it up with Zeitler patting you on the fanny and all the things that might go with that. But you have other responsibilities you have to be aware of, not the least of which is a guy who's going to come right and jam you in the face with your short arms.
Right.
So snaps of 7-on-7 are crap. And yet what I saw from Linderbaum was excellent today. Snaps were largely on the money. They were not low. He was getting good, I would say, I'm reaching down here, but they were kind of belt buckle to breast level snaps that were, at just the level you want them. There's a little bit of rotation of the football. I saw one bad one from McCary. There's a little wide, a little bit of rotation on the football that you wouldn't want. But most of the snaps were either they were not spirals necessarily back to the quarterback, but they were placed in a way that was easily catchable in that midsection area where the quarterback is not being distracted from his ability to acquire the field.
Yeah, I was keeping an eye on Linderbaum's snaps for sure. I think one thing we talked about last season is that Bozeman's snaps seemed a little slow, right, to get back there. And of course, without having the frame-by-frame and a good stopwatch for what I wasn't able to tell if they were faster. They seemed like they may have been a little bit zippier, but it wasn't like super apparent, right? It was not scientific.
Right. Well, I think the final location of them might even be more important than velocity. 12 to 6 curveball to me might be okay if the final location is right at the, you know, just above the waist. It's when you got to reach down.
Yeah.
Then the quarterback's distracted to get the football in the hat. Then he has to reacquire the field. And I mean, that can be 0.3 seconds. You know, it could be as long as a pitch takes in baseball maybe to react to. And that's just a lot of lost time in terms of being able to figure things out. So
yeah.
It wasn't the only really good thing I saw from Linderbaum, though, tonight. I mean, I can't take anything from resolving double teams in this. They do run drills, but they have guys standing there, you know, to try and do it. But you don't know what the level of physicality, if you're getting their A moves from the defender and whatnot. But we did see Linderbaum downfield, way out in front of a big run off jet motion to Duvernay. Mm-hmm. And that he was way down the field. I mean, 12, 14 yards down the field, it seemed like, way in front of the play. Just was very impressed at how quickly he got out there.
Yeah, I don't recall that particular play, but I do remember hearing camp reports from a day or two ago of Linderbaum just like soaring down the field in a shockingly fast, like gazelle pace. And that's what we drafted him for, quite honestly, is his ability to get to the second level and his speed. It might be really special.
Yeah, I agree. He's a cat there. There's no doubt about it. Real impressed that they were getting Khalil McKenzie out there. They had him pull on one of the plays fairly early to get out in front of a play. It looked like, you know, you have to see this under live fire. So if they really want to try and figure out if they can somehow keep Khalil McKenzie on the roster, probably they'll get him a fair amount of time at offensive line during the preseason. Particularly in that last game when nobody wants to be taking snaps and they don't want to be giving snaps to anybody who might get hurt. So it's kind of a double tightrope they have to walk, you know, among players who aren't going to make the team. But he'll probably get quite a lot of snaps in that game. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see if he can provide a little something on the offensive line so that he can be the eighth offensive lineman on a lot of game days and be available to play defense as needed.
Yeah, I guess the only question I would have about him is that, or maybe this extends to any player, do you think there's any players, given the Ravens' depth, that they're going to try and hide to make other teams not quite notice that they might have something there?
Hide during the preseason?
Yeah.
I think, if anything, they'll do just the opposite, because the league is on to the whole Khalil McKenzie thing. And, you know, it's not a secret to anybody, but he's wearing the offensive color jersey. Mm-hmm. So out there. So we see that that's immediately a sign that they probably want to show it that way. And I think they'll want to show it that way all preseason. My guess is he will not play a single snap of defense, or if he does, it won't be much.
Gotcha.
During the preseason. And then that's the hiding that they would do. And then, you know, come he's the eighth offensive lineman. Oh, now we need a defensive tackle. He's in there.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So anyway, we'll see how that works. But the Ravens have done a good job in the past over the years of putting an offensive lineman to play in jumbo fronts on defense when they've needed them. And they've done a good job when they lose somebody during a game of knowing who on the offensive line would be the guy who could help them on defense. All right. What would you like to talk about next?
If we may, I want to take a brief divergence into the very beginning of the practice and talk about Stout. I thought he did a really great job in his brief amount of punts that he did. I heard that he put it at the 1 and the 2 yard line, like right at the edge there. And I don't know. He seems all right. I saw him doing holding the ball, and I think Tucker hit a 60-yarder. So, I mean, these are all like pretty decent signs. They even had a camera on his helmet, so you could see like him catching the snaps and stuff. So,
no, I did not. I didn't see the feed. I was there, so I didn't get the chance to see that. That's interesting, because I heard that was happening. I heard they were doing helmet cam. All right. Well, I saw a few other things going on with the kicking that were a little strange. First of all, Tucker has the little, you know, tripod-y like device that he kicks from when he doesn't have a holder.
Yeah.
Okay. And so he was using that, and he was doing some long kicks, And I got to think he was at a point where he was pissing some people off on the other side of the field where 11-on-11 drills coming on, because basically he was setting up a kick to be kicked between 11-on-11 plays going on that side of the field. So he's kicking over everybody. Uh-huh. And you know, the first time that that hits somebody in the back of the head, that practice will end. And I know it's Justin Tucker and there's a special situation, but you know, it's just, it's the first time it happens that the practice will end. He got a lot of iron today. So, you know, in the 60 yarder that he hit was a bounce. I couldn't tell if it was exactly off the crossbar or off the support bar, but it hit something and went over from a point of view. Did you see?
Yeah. Yeah. It looked like the crossbar. Yeah.
Okay. So he had two others that doinked the crossbar and came back. And one of them was not that long, maybe 55 yards.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's not the kind of distance where Justin Tucker would normally doink a ball under what are optimal conditions. The ball's being held by a tee and, you know, and he's kicking the ball. And then he tried some longer kicks. He tried, I think, from both 60 and 65. And it's not like he didn't make any, but he didn't have a really great day of kicking the football. And he got crossbar twice on the practice kicks, once in an actual drill kick where he actually got it over anyway, just like the 66 last year. And then he hit the upright on a third kick while he was kicking over these 11-on-11 drills. And most of that was off the tee. But the other point I want to make, that some of it was out there with Stout actually doing the holding for him. Mm-hmm. And I'm not picking up that Tucker is entirely happy with how Stout is putting the ball on the ground.
Okay.
So there were regular snapped footballs. So you don't have a rush going on, but you have the other elements. Stout has to handle the long snap. He has to put it in place, spin the laces, get it set up properly for Tucker to kick the ball. And Tucker missed some kicks under those circumstances. I did not get the impression as Tucker walked to the sideline that he was particularly happy with the way that had gone. And that may be unhappy. He may have been unhappy with himself for missing some kicks, or he may have been unhappy with the way it was going with Stout in terms of how the ball is getting placed, because Stout was at that point out there doing it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was trying to keep an eye on that myself. The parts I saw, I didn't really gain that, any perspective on it one way or the other. But I was keeping an eye on Stout placing the ball. And I don't know, maybe I'm just so used to watching Cook that it did seem a little different. And it did seem a little bit maybe, and part of me is wondering if it's me just trying to like overanalyze him, but I was like, maybe he's like thinking about it more. It's not as fluid, or it's not quite the same or whatever, but I don't know. Like I definitely was keeping a close eye on it. And part of me wants to do like an overlay of like thinking back to like the Baker Mayfield, Haloti Ngata overlay where they have him running, or I think it was Haloti Ngata, maybe it was Matt Ibuge actually. They have him like running together. I want to see them, placing the ball at the same time and see like how it looks. But yeah, I'm curious to see how this develops.
Yeah, me too for sure. I could not tell who the gentleman was, but it looked like a taller guy than the other coaches, and it might have been Cook himself, was there walking with Tucker to the sidelines talking to him about somebody. But it was somebody, and it wasn't Brown, because I know what he looks like, Randy Brown. Mm-hmm. It was somebody else who looked maybe the right size and shape to be Cook, but I'm not sure if it was him. But anyway, that guy, civilian clothes, apparently had some things to say after some of the missed kicks were made on the fully long snapped, too stout kicks that Tucker made at one point during practice.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. So lots of good receiving highlights from this. I think a lot of the other services will pick this up, but there were definitely some high quality catches during the day. I thought we saw a fair amount of Bateman being probably Lamar's second favorite target today. So by far the most targets were at Andrews.
Oh yeah, it was almost sickening. I was like, all right, we get it. Mark Andrews, you got the connection. Pass to somebody else. Yeah, it kind of goes back to that show we just did, where it's like, yes, he's just force feeding it, almost seemed. Particularly sometimes when he was under pressure, he just went right there. And it worked out a lot, but I don't know. I was a little disappointed by that.
There was a badly forced ball by the left sideline that was into bracket coverage that he's lucky wasn't intercepted. And that was just, to me, that was the worst throw of the day for him. So it was a bad judgment throw in terms of doing. He had other times where some of his receivers let him down with drops, but That was the really the worst one of the day for me. Prochet had a great corner route to score. Mm-hmm. That looked good. We had, let's see, it was number 17, and that is Devon Williams, yep. Who made a really nice catch. We had Jaylon Moore jumped over number 17, which is Robert Jackson. Each 17 in offense and defense, yeah, right, both right, have a number. Right. He had been flagged already for DPI on the play. And then he made the catch. And, of course, immediately that ball got windmilled up in the air. And Moore was very excited about the catch, as he should have been. But it's kind of like a Mark Andrews reaction from last year's Colts game where he got thrown to late, way downfield, broke through a DPI, still made the catch with one hand. That Jaylon Moore didn't quite do that, but he caught the ball right over the defender, and was very proud of himself. It was good to see.
Yeah, I saw also Shamar Briggs have a big catch using his big frame of 6'4", and that was good to see. Yeah, like you said, the Prochet corner route made Seymour look bad. But I think the highlight for sure, and every media coverage will show it, is there was a couple of Bateman throws. There was that bomb in tight coverage where he beat Marlon and got the ball. There was strong chemistry, I thought, in the red zone drills.
Yes.
And that was critical to see. And I think they were saying in the broadcast, because they had a couple of people commentating on it for the live feed, saying that, oh, maybe they're getting a connection almost like Hollywood and Lamar in the red zone, because like you saw that working quite nicely. So that was good to see. Definitely we'll need a lot of that this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You made the point that Wallace didn't play with the first team, but Huntley threw him a nice ball in the end zone. It was kind of similar to two Jackson to Bateman throws.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were the typical Lamar Jackson touchdowns. And what I love about the Ravens offense is they don't look to throw fade routes when they're down the red zone. They look for open linear targets without having to try and put arc on a football to deliver it there. Fade routes have some of the lowest completion percentages. They're very dangerous. They seem safe. The only way you can throw them entirely safely is to make them even lower percentage catches.
Right. Yeah, I know.
And so, Lamar Jackson is such a weapon in the red zone because he moves laterally, finds that seam in the defense, then throws to find the spot. He did it twice to Bateman, and that was really impressive, I thought. And Mark, they're almost on consecutive plays here where I had found it here in my notes. Anyway, it was terrific.
But, yeah.
Real good to see Wallace make a similar catch in the end zone. It's Huntley. Each of the quarterbacks got a little bit of time,
mm-hmm.
but by far, of course, Lamar got the most. He was wearing white sleeves that night, but Huntley got a fair amount. And Arthur Brown, that's who I want to call him, but Arthur Brown's a linebacker. It's Anthony Brown, number 12, got a little bit of time too. Do you have a hard time on the TV or on the feed telling the quarterbacks apart?
Yeah, because it was really low contrast, mm-hmm. the jerseys that they were wearing. I mean, the truth of the matter is neither Brett Hundley or Anthony Brown looked particularly great, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They did not seem to be pressuring the Ravens to keep a third quarterback. Yeah. So, yeah, that was the only takeaway I really had, was that they didn't really seem particularly special. And it looks like it'll be Lamar Jackson and Tyler Huntley for the roster.
I would agree. Anthony Brown did have a good what looked like a two-minute drill after the first couple of units hadn't gotten it done. So on the it was late in the 11-on-11. He had several good throws in there. It looked like they might have had a couple of gifted first downs, but he drove them kind of down the field. And where do I have the rest of the notes on that? Anyway, he had moved the team down the field effectively, and I thought he was the quarterback of the two who had looked a little better. I would agree. I don't think Hundley is likely to make the team. Doesn't mean Hundley's not on speed dial. He's got some NFL experience.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy they could bring back, but I don't think there's anything here that says you got to keep him.
No, not at all. Now, I will, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind going over to Isaiah Likely and kind of what he did. So he was, they were using him a lot as kind of that halfback role. He definitely was able to kind of make good yak opportunities. They're not hitting each other, so how much can you really gather from it? But he definitely was, I thought, performing quite nicely. Had a couple of highlight catches, and I'm really starting to think with this hernia surgery for Kolar, he's going to get boxed out, I think, of playing time this first year.
He's going to miss half the season, it looks like, from this. Sports hernias are one of those things. Groin injuries in general for athletes can be very tricky and get over their obliques for baseball players or pitchers in particular, and how long those can keep you out of action. But he could easily miss half the season. It's not even impossible. They just put him on IR, season-ending IR, for the surgery. But if he is back, he'll probably have to start the year on IR. He'll take up one of the handshake agreements to get an extra player onto IR at the beginning of the year. And the Ravens only have a limited number of those.
Right.
So their depth has to hold up otherwise in order to make that work. And then they really have to believe that he'd be back and offering something towards the end of the season. It's a big setback for the Ravens to have this. I guess they knew it was coming given what his history had been in college, but I don't think they thought it was as bad.
Definitely not, because he would have started on the PUP, which would have gave him a better way of getting him into the season without having to use one of the handshakes. So it feels like a misstep. It feels like it snuck out of nowhere. Maybe there was a bigger flare-up than they're letting on that's pushing the issue here. But nevertheless, it is unfortunate for him, kind of continuing the streak of the second tight end drafted being the one that's more impressive of the draft. I don't know what to say of it other than I'm disappointed, because I'm really excited for both of them. But at least it looks like Likely's off to a good start. Hopefully Kolar can recover.
Yeah, I mean, Likely did a lot of things well today, but the thing I was most impressed about was the catch radius. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that you ascribe to a player like Kolar, big body, long arms, likes to catch the ball away from his body. I'm always happy to see that in any player, but in a player like Likely, where that's not his immediate descriptor, then you want to have a guy who can reach back for the ball, can reach forward for the ball, can capture a bad ball with some facility. Mm-hmm. And I thought I saw that today. Now, some of the things he did to go catch a ball, it's kind of like the Linderbaum making good snaps under ideal conditions. There's no receiver who should really be worried about going up high for the football in the middle of the field right now.
Right.
I think we can agree on that. In a practice situation, I mean, you can leap up to your heart's content. And as long as you don't literally fall on your neck yourself, you're fine. That's a good place to catch the football. But you're not going to get undercut by a defender. If you do, that guy's probably going to be off the team. Get a talking to, depending on who he is.
Right, right, right.
But anyway, he was certainly going up to get the football and showing that good catch radius today. And we'll still have to see what he can do in a game if there's any issue with alligator arms as that moves on. Now, I'm not specifically saying I have any reason to believe that will be the case, please.
Right.
But I want to see that catch radius in a game more than I want to see it in a 7-on-7 drill.
Yeah, I agree with that. There were definitely a couple times where his catch radius was one of those things where he gets snapped in two.
Yeah, very good. All right, so one of the things we haven't talked about yet, other than we talked about it for Lily briefly, but the one-on-one pass rushing drill, really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Has some good notes from that one. Do you mind if I go through those a little bit?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the drill is they line up all five linemen. They just have one of them as like a live rep of pass rushing versus pass blocking. And when you're not in pads like this, it's about as much as you can do physically. And if you were one of the real key things to look for are running back versus inside linebacker blocking drills. Those are a big deal. They do those a couple times per year. When they do them, they have a handshake line afterwards. They sometimes do, or they did at least under Wink. So it's the kind of thing you understand the gravity of the of what they're actually doing when they do that. But in this case, McCary held off, 94. Is that Isaiah Mack? We had, I mentioned a Fa'alele one, Moses. was coaching him after the play, got that. 59 did a really good job, and that's Dalen Hayes. So it's a guy we really wanted to see some good things from. Did a really good job against Jared Jones-Smith. So that's on the outside. That's against the tackle. He pulled him back into the pocket, just passed it, and then shed him to the inside, which is exactly what you want in those situations if you're using a bull rush to get to the quarterback. So I really like that one. Did a good job of it. I thought Stephen Means was on the field. Now, he didn't get a ton of reps today, it didn't look to me, but he was on against Jimmy Murray, number 67. Those guys fought it out to, I'd say, a draw in their time. So some interesting ones there. Probably one of the really ones I liked, and this is good to see, is that Michael Pierce got some great push against Kevin Zeitler. So that's good to see. It's we're concerned about where Pierce's conditioning are. We're not concerned at all about whether or not Zeitler is a great offensive lineman. We know he will be when the season comes, and it's good to see him have a good rep versus a top player.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think one of the things I noticed, not to take away from the 101 drills, there was a couple times they were doing the 101s, not 101s, but they were just, I guess, running like almost agility drills. And there were a couple players that kind of stuck out, and then watching them progress throughout the rest of the practice. One of those players being David Vereen. I don't know if you saw him or had any notes on him. Number 33.
I noticed he was playing slot corner. A lot of my notes are numbered here. So that to me says something that stuck out. But we'll talk about that later. Make your point first, please.
Oh, yeah. He just stuck out. Like, one of the things I look for, particularly in these beginning practices, as we go into these preseason games, is I want to see the numbers I don't recognize and figure out who they are and what they do. And let's see, like, if they have a chance of making the roster. And like you said, he was playing a lot of slot corner. That is a kind of position that's up for grabs, so to speak, from a smaller school, Newberry. So I think he might be one of those players that the Ravens had their eye on, but knew they didn't have to draft, or they didn't think they had to draft. So I'm curious to see if he could be like an undrafted free agent, that makes the team or something. I know that obviously our secondary is loaded, so it'd be a very difficult task, but maybe he sticks around the practice squad. But it was just something I'm keeping an eye out for those kind of players, and he stuck out to me. And I was wondering maybe in those one-on-ones if you noticed any players like that.
Aaron Crawford. I'll go through the rest of my notes just real quick. Aaron Crawford kind of got beat by Linderbaum head up, which is great because we need Linderbaum, the number one draft pick, to be the guy. It's too bad that Crawford couldn't make progress against a good player. But Crawford is probably headed for the practice squad and will be a guy that'll be available to the Ravens on an as-needed basis. Saw Phillips put Matabike on the ground. Past the pocket, and it's not an ideal blocking route for him because you don't like the left guard blocking his assignment to the right around the pocket. To the left around the pocket is probably okay. You still don't want him running into your left tackle or running into the legs of your left tackle, but running into the right is when you really run into injury risk when he's doing that. And that's where the rep ended up. Some of that is Matabike and him trying to get an advantage to one particular side as opposed to the other. But Matabike ended up on the ground on that rep, so that was a good one for Phillips. I think that was most of what I had. Another one, minor player involved here, I'm not going to get into. But I thought from a one-on-one perspective, that was good. I want to go back to slot corner, though, because that was a place where I was surprised at who the Ravens were playing at corner as the day went on. They obviously were shorthanded at corner in general, but at slot corner in particular. So Pepe Williams is one of the guys I expect to spend a lot of time there. He wasn't there that much.
He was playing outside.
I was
surprised by that too, yeah.
and you know who was playing slot? Jalen Armour-Davis.
Right.
And he's a guy who comes out of the draft, absolute rep. He will play nowhere but on the outside based on his speed and his length and whatnot. I mean, he's an obvious outside corner fit.
Right. Yeah, it's not strange. I noticed the exact same thing, and I was very confused by it. I was like, are you guys out of position? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they may just be trying different things. But whatever the reasoning is, it's a little strange to me that this would be the way it shows up. It may be that, you know, without Marcus Peters, they are short enough on corners that they're really just having to put it together however they want. So we saw Seymour on the field quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, we did see other guys who do not figure onto the roster like Jackson mm-hmm. on the field a fair amount. Could Robert Jackson make the practice squad? Maybe. Could Kevon Seymour make the practice squad? I think so, mm-hmm. but probably not the roster again, I would say. We did not see exactly what I was expecting at cornerback. I'll just leave it at that. I was surprised by the positions they were playing.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I also didn't really notice Stevens too much in this practice. And I don't know if that was just... There's a couple players that kind of slipped past my radar. I didn't see too much of Travis Jones, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I think it might have been the broadcast feed, like not wanting to focus on those kind of defensive reps. They're a little less sexy than the offensive ones. Yeah. So, I definitely felt like it was a little lacking in that department.
Yeah, Travis Jones looked pretty good to me. He's one of the players who, you know, I thought looked big, looked like you're going to have a lot of trouble moving me mm-hmm. in this thing. So I'm happy, but I need to see more against live fire. I missed, unfortunately, any rep he might have had in these one-on-one pass rush drills. So I'm sure he had one at least mm-hmm. because everybody gets one, but I missed it and I need to see more. So, that was the issue with that. Interesting how they were deploying the safeties as well too. I thought they did a little bit with throwing the dime out there, and so we were seeing some sub package work. So that's nice to see. I did not notice the quarter on the field. So when they had Jefferson out there, I think it was typically in dime. He got very few total reps on the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you were kind of focused in on that at all.
No, it was hard to keep track of snap counts, so to speak, from that perspective. A lot of times they would zoom out, you know, after mm-hmm. the play or replay, and you wouldn't be able to see the substitutions. It was kind of hard.
You get an interview or something.
Yeah, exactly. Point, yeah. Something like that. So it was a little difficult to capture all that. That's why I appreciate your notes for sure for that part.
All right, they had three safeties on the field, including, you know, Chuck Clark playing his more traditional dime role from 2019 that we remember fondly. So they hit some of that, and they had some dime with Queen and Clark, which is, you know, one of the interesting things. When they had two inside linebackers on the field, they had some very distinct pairings, and they pretty much stayed with them for most of the day. So they had Queen and Bynes together. So that's, you know, I don't know if this is the way it's going to work out, but it sure looks like they're not in a hurry to go back to Queen as the Mike, that they're perfectly happy with the combo for the two down combo anyway of Bynes and Queen. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to play, if Queen is good enough to play a third down, well, terrific. He can play it with Clark in the dime and Bynes can be out. It's not like the other competition is Tony Jefferson, really, that he has to beat out for snaps otherwise. Mm-hmm. And then they had other guys. They had Welch in there with Harrison getting some snaps. Didn't see a lot from Harrison in this practice.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. My follow up. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And then John Ross was in there with Diego Fago. Ross was the guy who got thrown over for a really nice touchdown. I think that might have been at the end of that red zone drive by Anthony Brown. But he got beat, and I think it was a 46-on-40. Nah, could have been. That would have been Nick Moore. So now I'll have to get that for you because I don't know who he actually beat on that, who he actually got beat by on that play. But good stuff around on that. What else did I want to say about? They had a bunch of different guys returning punts in this one, so they had Devin Duvernay, of course, returning punts, but they also had Prochet back there. They had Pepe Williams try. I already said Duvernay. Bateman was back in the group. I did not actually see him return a punt, but he was back there talking to Duvernay. so maybe he was about to do it, or maybe he was just taking his special teams reps to do there. And then the other guy was Slade Bolden, who had a rep or two. And I didn't have anything to go on in terms of fielding the punt, exploding out of the punt. Most of it was pretty well covered punts from what I saw. Seemed to be shorter distance, and they're covering the punts very well from the other side.
Since you brought up Slade Bolden, that was another thing I was keeping an eye on, was Bolden, Polk, Victor, you know, some of these guys that have an opportunity to be camp darlings based on people who have, you know, seen their work before in college and thought maybe they would be able to contribute. None of them stuck out too much to me. Like, I definitely saw them using Bolden in the slot, which was like as predicted. Polk, I just noticed that he was as light as advertised. He definitely looked very like slim. And yeah, I and Victor, you know, we've seen a little bit of him from last year. I didn't see too much during this practice, at least, to see him kind of rise up. It seemed like Williams was the one that was probably the most notable of that group, Devon Williams, from like the pieces I saw.
Yeah, I agree. It was, he had one good catch that I recall down the right sideline, I think, where Jackson was covering him. He definitely made some plays. Polk was close at least once. They used a wide variety of players as gunners in this practice on special teams. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that may decide the fifth wide receiver position. But you got a lot of guys who are getting opportunities there. So Benjamin Victor had an opportunity as a gunner, and Trayvon Clark did. We saw Hill there one time. That was fine. I already mentioned Victor, so that's actually a second rep for him. And then Devon Williams also got one. So if you're going to use your taller wide receivers and whatnot in that gunner role and try and get them some sort of a break there, one of the things you're trying to figure out is can I, between the balance of what he can do for me as a receiver, can I use special teams? Maybe it's a little bit of a tiebreaker to decide if he can make the roster. At least that's my hope as to how that works out, that it's really based on your receiving and the tiebreaker is your thing. And it's not that somehow the special teams coach gets to designate a player that he really needs to have.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. It will be probably a combination for that fifth wide receiver for sure, just because I don't foresee one of them becoming so self-evident as a receiver that they'll have to be the one selected, right? You mentioned it with the gunners with Justice Hill. I was taking note of the running backs used. Interesting to see. They gave Mike Davis a good amount of run, it seemed. And he seemed to have more juice than maybe any of those elder statements of last year, which is not surprising. He was on a team. But yeah, like just trying to get an idea of that rotation right now with the two big guns of Dobbins and Edwards still inactive, so to speak. It was interesting to watch. I didn't see too much of Batty. I wanted to see more of him, but yeah, hopefully we'll see more in the preseason.
Yeah, Beatty dropped a receiving rep, so he was on a little flat route on the right side. I don't know if a little bit of a play got extended. Almost seemed like a little bit of a dump off, and he wasn't able to secure it. So that's too bad that happens. You know, it does. He's still, I think, the Ravens' best receiving running back. He better be. Let's put it that way, because there really isn't anybody else. It's obviously it. So hopefully he hasn't taken an insurmountable number of demerits from that one.
Yeah, I noticed that one too. And I was trying to keep an eye on him in pass protection. He seemed to do okay in that from the reps I saw. So that's positive, because that's definitely a difficult thing for people to pick up in their first year.
I want to go back to special teams for a second, because we're talking about the gunners on the punt. But this is one of the really interesting things. It wasn't Tony Jefferson back there as the personal protector for Jordan Stout, as I would have expected. It was Geno Stone for most of the reps in there. And they had, you know, they rotate through some people, but Geno Stone is the one I'm noticing being lined up there. So it looks like they may not be Jefferson that's the obvious co-cap replacement this year, or at least they're hedging their bets by having Stone available if they can't really find a way to keep Jefferson on the roster otherwise.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think Stone's going to be a player that kind of sneakily gets more and more, I don't know, responsibility, so to speak, with this team. I think he may have been a little slow to start that rookie year when we first acquired him. And, you know, obviously he got cut and came back. But it seems like he's starting to get more and more of a role, particularly, I mean, you can't say enough about that opportunity he had to wear the green dot. and how much it said about him, and what the coaching staff thinks of him. So I do think seeing him get more responsibility is a good thing, give him more opportunities to make the team and be a part of the team and contribute to the team when he's unable to get snaps because of the safety room is so loaded right now. But keep him involved, and that's all very good stuff.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to make up a list of all the players who have ever worn the green dot for the Ravens in a game, because it's not that many in total. Oh, no. I mean, I think my guess is the list is under 20 in length, and think of all the players that have ever played for the Ravens. But it before the end of Ray Lewis's career, in fact, no, there's more than that, because there's a few guys like McLean and Grayson and people like that who wore it for a game while Ray was out. I was going to say,
I think there's enough one-offs to get you over 20, but if you took out the one-offs, like if they had to have multiple games, it'd probably be much under 20. Yeah.
Yeah, but then Geno Stone gets excluded, so you can't make the point about Geno Stone. All right. Well, anyway, outstanding night. Lots of good things to see. Leaves us wanting more in terms of the initial preseason games and what'll be happening then, and all the fun stuff we expect to see from the first live fire. All the things we expect not to see in terms of giving away their scheme before the opening game. But it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, get to see more of these players, get more and more snaps out of them, and just like more focused in a way, right? Like when they're actually, the drills are good. There are a lot that you can gain from drills, but it's nice to see like actual 11-on-11 play the whole way and tackling and all that good stuff.
Yep. Actual football.
Yeah, actual football.
Can't beat it. Outstanding. Alec, always a pleasure talking football with you, and doing this was a treat as always. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. Yeah, you can find us at One Winning Pod on Twitter, and that's also our website. You can listen to us. We have our State of the Division coming out in this Monday. That was really a lot of fun to record, and we're going to start talking about camp and going from there.
All right. Sounds great. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, give me a DM on Twitter. They're always open. And I'm interested in those 25-minute topics that we can get into in some depth. Had a great one today that we recorded that'll be out in a couple of days. But yards before contact compared to yards after contact on run plays. And a guy from PFF, a PFF intern we've had on before, Arjun Meadow, is coming on. 25-minute podcast, but it's a ton of information about how the Ravens are complete outliers in both those categories. And what's the actual source of that? What's the actual reason for that? So I think there's some good discussion there, and I hope you'll tune in for that one. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
Of course. Thanks, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.